I never ask that question when it happens to me. I'm always like, true. There's glitter on me. Yes.
And then snack on it.
What? Hello, and welcome to Saving People, Queering Things, the Supernatural podcast where Dean sure knows a lot about Twilight. Today, we are pulling up to Season 6, Episode 5, Live Free or Twihard. I'm your host, August. My pronouns are they, them. And today, I am joined by my co-hosts.
I'm Elena.
And I'm Noah.
And we are also joined by returning guest star, guest co-host.
Ludo, hello.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming on again for this episode.
Thank you for having me for this episode.
This episode's so feral.
Extremely, extremely excited.
They pulled no punches.
This reveals of it. And also just the way the parody of it all is really, yes. Really well done.
Yeah.
Yes. I love a good, like, this is what, there's sometimes Supernatural will like name an episode something and then not commit to the joke. I'm going to say that again because my phone went off.
Nope. That was.
I love when Star Trek sounds make it into the episode though. So.
Okay. Well, then I'll just leave. I can just leave it. That's my text tone. I love it when they actually commit to the joke of the title. And this is an episode where they commit to the joke. There are Twilight and vampire references the entire episode. And I think they're very, very funny.
Truly.
But before we get into all of that, my question for today's episode for each of you is, what is a favorite depiction of a vampire in pop culture for you?
Oof. That's...
I have a very recent one. I am completely obsessed with the new iteration of Interview with a Vampire and the way in which it tackles the inherent queerness of vampires is just like c'est magnifique, no notes. It's really, really, really well done. And everybody always yells at me because I've never seen like the first adaptation of it. Like I'd say the original film, but it's based off the book, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen that one, but I have zero desire to after watching the AMC series. Because I just think it gets vampires very well.
It's just good enough that you don't need anything else.
Yeah, I'm just like, yes, this is exactly what I want out of my vampire content. And it's the gayest I've ever seen vampires be allowed to be. And that was really refreshing because every queer person I know is obsessed with vampires and monsters and cryptids. And that's just, that's how we do. Like, we're just into the monsters.
I mean, what we do in the shadows is pretty classic, and yes. I like how The Witcher deals with the vampires in the video games, and haven't read the books, but the show as well. But I don't know, those are always interesting vampires, but what we do in the shadows is probably most iconic.
I was actually thinking about that when I was watching this episode. I was like, I actually really love like Jennifer's body as like a vampire story, because it's like not a traditional vampire, but she still very much is a vampire. And now I want to watch that movie tonight.
Wasn't there some weird Disney movie where it was like Mom's Date with a Vampire or something?
Yes, Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire.
Sorry, like, I don't know why core memory just got unlocked there.
No, my God, I loved that movie when I was a kid. My sister and I were like obsessed with it because it had one of the aunts from Sabrina the Teenage Witch and then Mr. Sheffield from The Nanny, both shows that we were like obsessed with and raised on.
Oh my God, it is the guy from The Nanny.
It is.
Oh my Lanta. I never noticed that one.
Oh my Lanta.
You never heard me say that? I say that all the time.
I know, but I love it. It's funny. Yeah.
It only makes it on the podcast every once in a while.
Yeah.
There's someone else I know who says it like you say it sometimes, but I have another friend who says it like all the time, and so I associate it with them. But yeah,
there's worse things to be associated with.
It's kind of pretty funny. See, you all gave like really good vampire media thoughts there, but the two vampires that were like circling around in my head with this question gonna be a little embarrassing.
No,
a little more embarrassing.
No,
because I thought about the Count from Sesame Street.
Yes.
That is exactly who my heart would hope that you, August, as a person would think of.
Also Spike from Buffy, because I think both of those are very funny, funny depictions of vampires. And
Spike was the second thing that came, this like second one that came to mind, specifically Spike. Not like that show.
No, just Spike.
Nicolas Cage's Dracula from Renfield was pretty good too.
Oh my God. That
I have not seen it yet, but
really want to.
It's so good.
Underrated.
I have a hard time with Nicolas Cage.
Oh my God, no.
But if it is good, I might be able to get through that.
Nicolas Cage has
never made anything bad in his life.
Never.
I love Nick Cage. I love him. And also, the movie's so funny and like really unexpected.
That's what I've heard, is that it's very funny.
My friend and I started cracking up because in the middle of it, or like towards like the big bad battle, like My Chemical Romance started playing.
No,
and fantastic.
Vampire media, perfect. Well, now that you've met all of us and maybe got some recommendations for your vampire new vampire media,
your thirst for vampire blood.
It is now time to catch you up. So if you haven't watched Supernatural recently, here's what you missed on the road so far. First up, Noah is going to recap the show up till this point.
Perfect. Easy. 30 seconds.
Are you ready?
Let me, yeah.
Over 100 episodes of content in 30 seconds. We believe in you.
It'll be great.
Well. I'm going to count you in.
Let's do it.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, so the two brothers, Sam and Dean, fought super hard to stop the apocalypse, and then they ended up enacting the apocalypse, and then they ended up stopping it by the end, but Sam had to sacrifice himself, quote-unquote, jumped into hell, and then was gone for a year. Dean survived and was suffering the whole time, but then found out that Sam was actually alive and was working with their dead grandfather and didn't tell him, but told Bobby, and Bobby didn't tell Dean, and then they've been dealing with that and trying to figure out how to get back into their hunting groove while figuring out if Samuel's actually trustworthy.
Solid.
Very broad strokes.
Hey, that's what that's for. You got us up to speed. So now it's Elena's turn to recap today's episode, Live Free and Twihard. Are you ready?
Prepared for this in no way, so this should be a good time.
Great. Love
I was
that
so excited. I was so determined to have my mixtape pick ready that I completely forgot to look at the document for these sort of things.
Well, you're going to do great. And I'm going to count you in 3, 2, 1, go.
We open on a bar full of brooding teenagers and people with underage IDs and shit. And they're like all into vampire stuff. And it's very leather clad. And it turns out there's vampires that are like kidnapping girls and, you know, using them because like Twilight is a craze. Blah. And so Dean ends up getting turned into a vampire while they're hunting them. And then they're like, oh no, what are we going to do? And then they're like, oh, we're going to cure you. And so then Dean has to go into the nest. He finds out there's an alpha vampire. And then they cure him. And then he's like, oh shit, Sam, let me get turned. And that's not good. What's the fuck?
I appreciate it that you went from saying all these teenagers are really into Twilight and really into vampires to saying, and then Dean gets turned. Like,
yeah, Dean gets turned into a fan of vampires. And, you know,
I don't think they had to do much
knowing
turning.
Who Taylor Lautner is.
Exactly.
Dean has an awful lot about Twilight in this episode.
He truly does. And I have
so
no
does Sam. Sam knew that Lautner played a werewolf. He said, whoa, he's not even a vampire.
Which leads me to believe that the two of them one night were sitting there and they were just like, hey, you know, the local theater is playing Twilight. We should like take a fifth of whiskey and go into the theater and like play a drinking game to it.
Buddy enough right now for that. I feel like this, like, I'm trying to match the dates and be like, what would have been, when would...
I think it's Lisa is into vampires and vampire media. Oh. And got Dean into it because Ben is like, but yeah, vampires are like, so spooky.
And then Dean had a whole moment where he was like, oh no, is this Rhonda Hurley part two? I hope this doesn't awaken anything in me, he says, watching Twilight.
But it's also like they were three movies deep into the movie franchise, let alone how popular the books already were when this was like filmed and came out.
True.
So, like, I think there's just like there's a reasonable explanation of like cost, like cultural osmosis that like
oh,
they
yeah.
don't know this.
It was everywhere. It was everywhere in those. Like, I didn't,
you could not avoid it.
I like was not allowed to read or watch a lot of media. So Twilight was definitely on the like big no list because, you know, supernatural beings and demonic shit and all that.
And teen sex.
Yeah, that was also equally probably the problem.
Except they didn't have sex. That was like the whole thing. Because accepting Meyer as a Mormon.
And not until eventually, because they do, and she looks like a punching bag. Like, they do.
That's their honeymoon. They're married. It doesn't matter anymore.
How much older is he than her? We're losing the point. He's 1,000. Okay.
It's a problem. Anyway.
He's 100.
I knew all of this stuff about Twilight, and despite the fact that I didn't see or read any of the Twilight, like, I think I saw, like, the second movie with a friend, but not till I was, like, 90, which was, like, quite a while. Was at the point where Twilight was, like, out of the, like, cultural
moment. I
was
17 when I read them and went to all the midnight releases. Of the movies.
You were the target audience.
I wish I wasn't, but I absolutely was. And I had a t-shirt that said Team Switzerland that I made and wore to the midnight release of Breaking Dawn.
How did I not know this?
I love that. Wow. I love that for you.
Remind me to show you my bracelet. I have a bracelet that I got at Barnes & Noble because I was one of the first 10 people in line. So it's a little bracelet that has like the two charms on it. Yeah, it's bad. I don't talk about my Twilight days. That was the dark ages of my fandom. No.
I've only seen two of the movies, the first one and the last one. And it was during that winter storm a couple years ago, and we had lost power and heat and electricity most of the time. And so we booted up whatever discs we had on the laptop and made it through Twilight and then Breaking Dawn Part 2 in the living room while it's drenched in snow.
Quite a jump. My sister was really into Twilight, and so I went to one midnight premiere with her, my mom, and one of her friends. Mm. I don't remember which one it was, though.
Yeah, like I have all my copies of, like, original first edition copies of the books that I keep on a shelf facing backwards so no one knows my shame.
Except now you're talking about it on a podcast.
On a podcast, but it's
publicly
fine.
Broadcast.
Listen, I've come to terms with my Twilight fandom years. You know what?
Have you? Because they're still backwards on the shelf. I don't.
Yeah.
This might be the timeline. It might be time to turn those books around.
Maybe.
Own it.
Let them see the sun. They miss it.
They can't see the sun, Noah.
That's the whole
point. And glitter. It's the whole point.
Yeah, they'll just start sparkling.
I ended the episode and found a piece of glitter on my cheek and was like, how did that get there?
I never ask that question when it happens to me. I'm always like, there's glitter on me. Yes.
And then snack on it.
What?
Mm-hmm. So now it's time for...
Okay, you lost me a snack music on it.
Sorry, I feel like I want to back up, but also I think I'm going to keep going. I think we're going to keep moving. It's time to pick some music to accompany us on our journey. Here's what we have for this week's episode mixtape. Anyone want to start?
I'll go. So my pick for this week is a two-part, one because of the lyrics and one because I feel like it fits the mood of like brooding teenagers. My pick is In My Blood by Shawn Mendes. Because it just, yeah, I think it's, well, the title speaks for itself, but also like you've got lyrics like laying on the bathroom floor, feeling nothing, I'm overwhelmed and insecure. Like basically Dean realizing, oh no, I am becoming the thing that I fear. Mm. So that is my pick for this week.
Good call.
My pick this week is Arson by Christian Gates. Sort of a boppy tune about how I feel like Dean approaches the end of the episode once he's cleared out the nest and has to deal with the two remaining dangers that come to save him. And since the lyrics kind of go, I'm so sorry I burnt your house down. That wasn't very thoughtful of me. I should stick to writing songs and not messing with lighters. I guess my mama never taught me not to play with fire.
Cool. I like those lyrics.
It's very good. Very good.
I went back and forth on my pick for this episode. And by which I mean, I looked at like five different Hozier songs and was like, which one? Mm. So what I've decided to go with is From Eden by Hozier. Yeah, I don't have coherent thoughts
fits.
About it.
It's
it just
beautiful.
Fits. The vibes fit. The lyrics fit. It's a fantastic song. I will use Hozier again probably soon.
Nothing wrong with that. Nobody's complaining, I don't think.
That's my pick today. Pluto, what about you?
Okay, so full disclosure, I forgot to actually listen to the whole song before I chose this.
Yeah, it's fine. We're going with vibes.
But in the opening scene, after the Rose of Far, when they're in the bar, a song called Bela Lugosi's Dead by Bauhaus is playing. And there's like several layers of like vampire relatedness in that whole thing. Because obviously like Bela Lugosi like played Dracula and then the Universal Dracula movie in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And then like Bauhaus is like an art, like art, architecture, whatever style that was really popular during the Weimar Republic. And what else was right? Like was a product of the Weimar Republic? Fucking Nosferatu. And Metropolis, which I have a lot of thoughts about when it comes to like a vamp versus the virgin, and like the whole concept of like the vamp before like the like cinematic vampire of Dracula was like they were, it was like a vamp that's like a sexual, like sexually promiscuous, like powerful woman and all this stuff. And then also I just thought like the way that they used it in the episode was really clever, because it reminded me of, you know, like the first Scream movie, the first time we meet Sydney Prescott, how she's like in her room and like Billy Loomis pops up in the window and everything, right? And like in the background there's a cover of Don't Fear the Reaper by the Blue Oyster Cult playing. So it's like kind of telling you right off the bat, like he's the man, like he's your man, that's the dude, he's the killer.
Yeah,
they kind of do something similar with the lyrics of this song, because like when we first see Robert who were like, oh, this is a fake vampire, like the lyrics like undead, undead, undead are playing. So it's like telling us, actually no, he is a vampire, like for reals.
Yeah,
like he's for reals, he's undead.
Yeah,
so that was fun.
Yeah, that's a great pick. Oh, that, I appreciate that you knew the layers of that. That's awesome. Okay, so now that we've got our mixtape, it is time for this week's hunt. Today we are pulling up to season 6, episode 5, Live Free and Try Hard, through the theme of crisis.
Merry crisis.
Anyone have a place they would like to start with this episode? I know we have a lot of thoughts today.
We could start with The Road So Far.
Yeah, yeah.
Gordon Walker. We got some Gordon Walker.
How'd you feel, Noah, when you saw that?
Just sad, because I know he's not coming back, so it's just a bummer. It's like, okay, they fucked up him. Yeah. Okay,
he's all the way dead, unfortunately.
Yeah, and
that's saying something in the Supernatural universe.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it is,
because you can be all the way super mega dead sometimes and still
pop back up.
You can be in Lucifer's cage and somehow then you aren't,
and then you're just here.
Still, you can be saved by a plot device.
Yeah, I just thought like the Road So Far, the way everything was like spliced together, was so interesting, because you go from like Gordon Walker and vampires and how you get turned into a vampire, and like there's a lot that went into that season 3 episode, to the point where like I was on a podcast that was 2.5 hours long about it, because there's just a lot going on with vampirism and how it's presented in that episode. To like, all I could think about when I was watching, when like Lisa popped up and was like, Ben and I will be here and you can just be here when you're here or whatever, was like that part in the Barbie movie where Ken's like, you could be my bride wife or my long-term low commitment distance girlfriend. So she was like, you don't have to be my groom husband, you can be my long-term low commitment distance boyfriend. And
if this was one of those Google searches that like autofills, it would say, did you mean Castiel? But
that's the problem, is that this Ken has a long distance, low commitment boyfriend of his own.
Yeah, like he already has one of those. You were supposed to be the bride wife, but like he's thinking about his low commitment, that's actually kind of pretty high commitment, long distance boyfriend. But he's,
yeah, you know, his Mojo Dojo Casa Impala, you know?
Yeah.
You're welcome.
That's the title of the episode right there.
Yeah, right there. It's Mojo Dojo Casa.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting that like those were the two things that were like, those were the focuses of The Road So Far.
Yeah, which is sort of played out in the episode too. Like those scenes are so, like the rest of this episode is so like dark and broody and low lit. And then you get these scenes where they're trying to imbue this sense of like, Dean can totally be normal and like also have this. And you're, as the episode progresses, it's more and more clear that the crisis point for Dean is that he really can't have both.
Yeah.
Not without putting them in danger.
Yeah.
They really came out swinging with the Twilight references right off the bat with, I can make my own decisions. I'm 17.
Oof. Oof. Her name is Crispin.
They're laying it on so thick.
Yeah.
Like even like the affect that the actor is taking, which kudos to her for, like, I'm sure that was in the script. I'm sure that was in the script and or in the direction. And she plays the really flat affect that like Kristen Stewart is known for in those movies, and she pulls that up and it's very
paper cut.
Oh my god, the paper cut.
I'm so clumsy. Like the thickness of the parody is just
so
unparalleled. It's so nicely done.
They're having so much fun with it in the writing, and then the actors are delivering on that humor. And yeah.
Once they make it into her bedroom, and I swear I thought every single one of them was Pattinson. I was like, oh, how did they, nope.
I don't think it's right to that.
I think it's so funny because all of the actual like posters and all of that's fake, but they're also still name dropping Lautner and Pattinson and like as, so like it's just very funny because.
It is very much like playing on like how heavily, because of the success of Twilight and the Vampire Diaries, like everything was like vampires. There were so many vampire media going around that like
guilty as charged.
You don't like, they didn't even have to show you a Twilight book or even any sort of piece of Twilight media for you to know that like, oh, this chick's into Twilight because of all the other vampire stuff.
Yeah. And just the general like aesthetic that they were using. Like I feel violently thrown back to that era watching this episode.
Yeah. When they walk into her room, I was just like, oh, the war flashbacks.
Yeah. I was also just like, something I think about a lot when watching like this season in particular is just like, damn, the cost of living in the Midwest in the 2010s must have been so nice. Because like her bedroom is amazing. I would have killed for a bedroom like that. She had a 4-post bed, like queen sized bed.
Yeah. And everything has clearly been like painted and done. She all of the things on her walls have like incredible, beautiful frames, which
that she bought from Spencer's, I assure you.
Which does feel like, I was like, I was tacking up posters with pushpins and tape when I was that age.
Yeah, her stuff is framed. It's all very, like, a cohesive aesthetic. So it's like, did she do this by herself?
The paint has been done. So, there's got to have been some adult involvement because, like, it's been painted.
Yeah, I was very impressed by it. And then also, like, Lisa's a yoga instructor and a single mother, but, like, she lives in a very nice house.
She lives in a very nice
neighborhood. Like,
and like, has Dean, I'm curious, I'm wondering if Dean has set up like she had this before as well, but I wonder if any of the financial scams have also been contributing to this.
Well, he has a job.
Well, yeah, I mean, he has a job obviously, but then also like he's gone back to hunting. He's left the job. He's left that job.
Yeah, he does not currently have a job.
I mean, he's probably not employed with that job anymore.
He showed up to her already having that house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Dealing with that. Like, if anything, you know, she was able to take like more weekends with the girls because she had more spending money because somebody else was financially.
That's true. Someone else is also.
Like, she was really.
It's, yeah.
Keep with the Barbie discussion. Like, she was Barbie.
She is. Lisa is the Barbie. Also, I just like Lisa watching this episode. I remember in the fandom, I just reminded of the way the fandom treated Lisa. Because I'm like watching these scenes. And I'm watching how she's responding to everything in this incredibly reasonable. Like, again, she also is like, you can be here when you can be here, which is way more than most people would do in this circumstance. And she's trying so hard to like make this work for both of them. But she's also really good about like saying when it's not. And I just really have a lot of respect for like Lisa as a character. But I know that's like an uncommon thing in the fandom. I was talking to someone last night and they were going through a Reddit thread where people were like listing like their 5 least favorite characters. And I won't say a lot about that because a lot of them are there's a number of characters that feature prominently that like are not characters have reached yet. But like Lisa shows up on some of those lists of like people's like top 5 most
hated
characters.
She often shows up on lists and it always makes me
just
mad.
A lot of sexism. Mm.
Yeah. And it's like, I go back and forth. Like I've never disliked Lisa. Like I don't want to make it seem like I was like ever on like that level. But like I really go back and forth on how I feel about Lisa.
Yeah.
Because like I fully understand and recognize that like she is subjected to a lot of sexism and misogyny within the fandom, especially like back in the day. But it's also like, yeah, at some point she is very reasonable about like this isn't working or her like trying to make this work. But at the same time, I do question like the decision of just like even letting him into her life.
Oh, absolutely. Or like having him stay. Like I get it when he's in this like massive crisis right after he's lost his brother. But
yeah,
he even said says, like he says in an earlier episode, just how messed up, like he's reflecting on, he was like, I drank too much, I was a mess. And like, yeah, I can see her getting him help and then being like, okay, you can't actually, you are not healthy enough to functionally be in our lives. And yeah, some interesting decision making. Unless he is actually Ben's father, which I also do believe he is.
Yep.
And then I think that makes it more complicated for her. And I do think that explains a little bit of the her giving him more leeway.
I'm a Ben Winchester apologist.
Yeah, but it is just like, okay, like I get in the initial moment, but it's also like now you've like let this person who has taken months to like get it together, like around your child this much, to the point where now it's like you have to like try and maintain the stability or it's going to negatively affect your kid's life. But like that in itself is like, why? Like, I don't know. Like, I know it's like she's a woman being written by men and I know that's like the explanation for it, but it's like, I think she's like a very like complicated character for me to like analyze and like really like work through. But I will say like a lot of how she's presented, especially in like fanfic, I'm like, why are you doing that? That's not true at all.
Yeah, this is the thing, is like I don't love her relationship with Dean. I think it's really interesting. I don't really see like chemistry or compatibility with them at all. And she doesn't have a lot of personality traits outside of like mother and sort of like emotional support for Dean. But I don't dislike her as a character. I think I just like don't feel her relationship with Dean.
It's like she often falls victim to like sexy lamp syndrome, but like, but it's not her fault. It's a writer's issue fault.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like,
which is why she has such good moments and then also makes decisions that a human woman probably wouldn't make if they were as stable and well put together as she's presented.
And then, so it's like, because then people just like turn into this awful person. And I'm like, that's not, no.
Yeah, they turn her into a villain in a lot. She's a villain in a lot of fanfic.
She is.
Especially in Destielfic, she is the like.
Well, yeah, and that
which
that,
is, I just hate.
I feel exactly the same about like Lisa and Dean and Cass's situation, the way that I do about like Steve Rogers, Peggy Carter, and Bucky Barnes. Like, yes,
that's a
he's in love with Bucky Barnes, but that does not mean he wasn't also in love with her. Like, bisexuality exists.
Yeah,
and there's just, it bugs me when you get Destiel apologists. Who, and trust me, I'm one of the biggest, like, I literally have Destiel art right behind me on the wall. I love that, but it doesn't negate the fact that, yes, Dean is very clearly expressed in his time that he's into women. Like, that's not, him having feelings for Cass does not negate that. And I feel like a lot of the hatred towards Lisa, just in addition to the sexism and all the other isms, like it's also reeks a bit of biphobia.
Yeah. Perhaps. To me, she's more of like a Sharon Carter character, like figure to me, if we're going to do like the Stucky and Destiel comparisons, like in the way that she's treated by the fandom and within fan fiction, I feel like she's treated more like Sharon Carter was than Peggy.
I feel like Sharon has an extra level of weirdness because she's related to Peggy. So it's like compounded weird energy. So it's like,
I also will admit that's a corner of the fandom that I really don't know anything about. So,
I was in it. I was in that shit. So like, outside of like them being related, just like the way that like Sharon was characterized in like her relationship with Steve in fan fiction and Spucky Fix, it feels more similar to the way people do Lisa than like the way that they treated Peggy. Because Peggy is like normally this like angel. She's like, she's either the dead wife, the dead girlfriend. She's like the Gwen Stacy, right?
She's kind of unattainable because she's in the past and it's a lost love kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's perfect because, and she's not super real.
Mm-hmm. And Sharon is sort of an embodification of that to Steve's writers, not necessarily to Steve, but
attract.
So Sharon is Lisa, but Peggy is also Lisa. The idea of Lisa is Peggy.
So
in case we didn't explain this clearly
and
enough,
I am you and me, are we, and we are all.
If
you are one of the people that understands the intersection of these two fandoms, this metaphor might make a lot of sense to you. I'm close enough that I sort of get it, except I was never really deeply in that fandom.
I think it's like the same way that like, I'm not going to deny that like Steve Rogers had feelings for Peggy Carter, but I do think throughout most of the franchise, it's like he's in love with the idea of Peggy more than like actually the person.
Oh,
Peggy.
For sure.
And that's so much Dean's relationship with Lisa.
Yes. He's in love with the idea of Lisa.
and the idea of like normalcy.
That's a really good distinction to make, honestly.
Which is also why I think we see more like the moments with Dean and Lisa that seem to really stand out are mostly related to Ben. And like in terms of even in 601, most meaningful shots around showing Dean's previous year are around his relationship with Ben. Like that's the really concrete thing. And because I think like that's what Dean is looking for, stability. Dean is looking for the ability to care for people in a safe environment.
Yeah, a little scene of him like showing Ben how to do stuff with the car. Like,
yeah. Like
he wants to care about people. God damn him.
Lisa represents that. Lisa represents that like apple pie life.
Yeah. I think a lot about that like scene of them like in that montage of like them in bed in the morning, where it's like there's not really like a connection there. But then you jump to them making breakfast for Ben together, and it's like, okay.
That's where they have chemistry. They have chemistry as parents to this child. They don't really have chemistry as partners to each other. They seem a little out of sync with each other constantly.
Oh, and I'm so mad because I have a point I want to make, but I cannot make it till we get to the end of this season. And so like I need to throw it in a document somewhere because it's so relevant to this particular thing.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on though. We need to move on from Dean and Lisa and to actual things that happened in this episode. Because we haven't really talked about anything that's happened in this episode. Do we wanna can we jump right to like the scene where Dean gets turned?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
He tells that guy to bop your way out of here.
That's gotta be my favorite.
Again, such a unique, specific reference.
Yeah, it works. Why? And I love it, the whole like, you know, like you wearing glitter, man. And he's like, yeah, it works and get you laid. And he's just like you can just see him like filing that away.
Yeah, like, the wheels
wear
turning.
Glitter next time I'm near Ken.
So I wanna bring us back like 5 seconds to like in the bar though. Because like that was one of the moments where I was like, how the fuck have I never like catched on to this before? Where like when they're like trying to figure out like which of the dudes, brooding dudes, are the vampires.
Oh, yeah.
And like the one that like Dean is tracking, like we see him like following, and it cuts to the dude, and then all of a sudden it's like that dude is making out with a man, and it cuts back to solely Dean's reaction of it,
because we don't need to know what Sam thinks.
Yeah. Because we don't associate Sam with queer men, but like we do have to do that with Dean specifically.
He is kind of butch.
Because we know Dean has to have a reaction. And because in about 2 scenes, a male vampire is going to call Dean pretty and hit on him aggressively. Like we are going to have that happen in about 2 scenes. So we need to like give us some initial.
And Dean is going to react in a very like, thanks, but no thanks. But also maybe.
But he's going to react like that because this man's a predator. Yeah. Because he's going to react like that because like that's his react. It's not because he's a man and the play for that team is because they're on a case and this is probably a predator.
Yeah. I just thought it was like interesting because you have this moment of like, oh, like these minute acknowledgements that like queer men exist within the show and they are always somehow directly related to Dean.
We need to know how Dean will react to them, and we need to see Dean's discomfort.
I feel like,
or like internalized discomfort.
Yeah, like a sense of like nervousness or anxiety around it.
Those are better words. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of this, like, I need to look away because I can't let people know that I don't want to look away.
But he can't stop watching because he wishes he could be as free as they are. So it's an imbalance to strike. Yeah.
There's this like curiosity. Little,
like raised eyebrows and like nodding of like, oh, okay, like other people can do this.
It always feels a little bit like whenever Dean sees queer people, like a little bit of a light bulb. It always feels like another circuit is connecting in his brain.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, people in this context can be queer. Because then whenever we see it in another context, we'll be like, oh, straight people in this context can be queer. And it's almost a little bit like, and also especially when he sees like intimacy between queer people, like I'm thinking about in Real Ghostbusters, he sees the like connection between these two cosplayers. And then when it's revealed that they're a couple, there's this light bulb moment for him of like, oh, I can see this intimacy is like a desirable thing. And he can see the value in it. And like, and I think those are always really, it's really interesting to track moments of that for
him. Because you don't really get those for Sam.
You don't.
Sam doesn't need proof that like queer relationships can be intimate in good ways because Sam like doesn't need that.
also like under the larger layer of we are using this for shock value because those cosplayers are Winfesties and they were making fun of Winfest shippers. And then in this one, it's like, again, the shock value of like just seeing two men kiss.
And they're vampires. They're sparkly vampires.
Yeah.
You know, they're in a dark bar that's being sort of like communicated to be kind of laughable. But like, this is a fringe scene that we can mostly just use to make jokes.
Talking about wearing leather to the beach and making jokes about just people trying to live their life at a club and just chill.
Like, who asked you, Dean?
Who asked you? But also the vampire that Sam kills right before we see Dean, I watched it, I was like, what if that hadn't been a vampire though?
Well, Sam does exactly
no hesitation.
Sam does exactly no checking to find out if this is a vampire or just like
some idiot.
Well, also, like, the girl is genuinely into this.
Well, there was like, a girl with Sam, though. He's going follows this random dude into a closet. And then as soon as, like, the dude, like, hisses, like, just decapitates. And, like, you didn't do any check. You barely even turned around.
How can you be sure that's a vampire?
That gives me the impression that he's like, got some sort of other sense going on other than just his normal hunters.
Oh, you think that he's relying on something else.
That's what it says to me.
Ooh, that brings me to a question. So this is kind of like partly middle episode, part of the end of the episode. Noah, I'm really curious what you think is going on with Sam. And what you think is behind what Dean saw, if anything.
Yeah, see, I think he sees Sam being smirky whenever he's getting attacked and, you know, turned into vampire. And that's suspicious as hell, to say the least. I still don't know. I know it's not Sam. I know it's that. It's something else is fucked up in there. And I don't know what it is exactly. It feels like something nefarious and Lucifer related, but that feels too easy and basic. I want it to be more interesting than that. So maybe Crowley.
It is interesting to like pick up on these moments that like oh, they were really like, they were kind of subtle but also not subtle about like planting it in your head of like, you like something's funky here. You don't know what, but like something is funky,
something is amiss,
something's going, something. And I feel like we feel that in all of these like cases that they're doing where Samuel Campbell is involved, like there's just this sense of like some, we don't know. And I think we're getting so much at the beginning of the season from like very much Dean's point of view of like Sam seems like everything is fine. Dean is like, there is something off, but I don't know what it is.
And
like,
Bobby isn't giving him any sort of inclination or help there.
Yeah. Either. Well, and Sam isn't calling Bobby. Like I noted that in this watch that I hadn't like consciously noted before, is that when they need research, when they need help, he calls Samuel. He doesn't call Bobby.
Sam squared is some problems. Mm-hmm. Don't trust the Sam squared.
Samuel Campbell is just very off-putting in general. Like, I did not enjoy.
The one line he had that was good this time was, oh yeah, it's an old Campbell recipe. Kind of like the soup.
That's just funny because it just proves that like every Winchester adjacent person likes to make every and all references to anything they can.
Yeah.
It's genetic.
What is a Winchester or a Campbell without a pop culture reference?
He does also make a comment later on that I thought was interesting about like after Dean takes out all of the vampires, where he says something around like he's finally, oh, he does have some Campbell in him.
Yeah. It kind of feels like the pun thing is like from like the Campbell side now. Like, I don't think that's a Winchester trait. I think that's like a Campbell trait.
Which makes sense. I think it makes sense. I think that also like we didn't ever see John like really being humorous in the way that Dean does. It makes sense that it would come from the other side of the family. But I think it's really interesting that like Samuel was like, oh, he does have some Campbell in him.
After. And it's like there's blood everywhere.
Yeah, what's the pose that Dean was in when they walk in? He decapitated Boris and then scooted the head in a direct line away from the door, and then just so he could sit there and pose on it? That blood is bad.
Yeah, I think like he was a vampire. It had to be a little dramatic. That's
yeah, it's like
the gig.
Yeah, it's and he had to. I feel like he also doesn't, and he again because he doesn't trust Samuel, and he knows Samuel doesn't really like him, and he doesn't like Samuel. He's a little bit like, I gotta prove myself. I think both to Sam and Samuel, where he's like, you've been saying I can't hunt. Watch me.
to me, it felt more like Dean hears the vampires talking about the fact that there's an alpha vampire, and he knows that Sam and Samuel have been freaking out about alpha monsters, and so he starts exterminating all of them so Sam and Samuel can't get any sort of info out of Boris and learn more about alpha vampires.
Oh, he's actually being strategic.
He's trying to get everybody off the board before they get there.
That's interesting theory.
Yeah, now he has to be in the conversation.
Yeah, if they want information from the vampires, they got to talk to Dean about it.
They can't exclude him.
He can control the flow of information that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and maybe he can get some information because they have not been giving him any.
He won veto this week. Sorry, big brother.
I appreciate you finding a way to slip that in. And it is extremely dramatic. And I also do just think that that is Dean wanting to be that. Also, okay, I want to, this is a little bit of a pivot, talk about how they do the filming and also just like how they show visually what it's like for Dean to be a vampire.
Mm.
And maybe we can get into more of the like vampirism.
The cinematography and effects going on.
Lore and all of that.
I just think it's very interesting. There's a lot. The scene where Dean gets turned is like honestly one of my favorite scenes in the whole show. Because like I think there's like this, it's like I feel like in one way it's like this weird callback to that episode in season 5 where like Cass is beating the shit out of him in an alley, and it's like still this very charged moment because like
point of no return,
and their rituals and stuff. And then that's the episode where that has like the gag reel of like, where's my gay age, you know? Okay, what's going on there?
You're like, interesting choices we're making here.
So it's like, there's like, what I noticed is like, okay, so the Boris, he doesn't look like Cass, but he has like the same like somewhat physical features of Cass. He has very blue eyes. He has like dark hair, and like, he does not understand the concept of personal space in relation to Dean.
Womp.
And they meet in this alley and he starts like hitting on him, calling him pretty. And like, so like, it's very established that like who gets turned and when has to do with like, it is sexualized, like the drinking mm-hmm. of blood or the consumption of blood is very sexualized. This whole episode, like from like that scene with the paper cut in the beginning, that's funny, but it's also like sexualizing the consumption of blood. Well, it's adding this erotic element to it.
And he says later on to Dean about how like, you know, you're gonna go, like he basically talks about that's their whole strategy is to use sex as this like lure into vampirism. And then he's hitting on, and like he's hit on Dean after that, like before that point. Dean knows what that means.
He does talk about how it's a cycle that he's got in place. Boris has got, you know, not, and it's like, yeah, we use people to draw people in because they're attracted to us, and then we turn them. So if that's the process they're using, and Boris got Dean that way, then surely there's some level of attraction there, logically.
He's into it. Like he sees Dean, like, and he's like,
he's
yes,
cool with it.
This.
Because it's like cool. When he's doing, like what I notice is like when he's doing the wrist thing, like Dean knows how you get turned into a vampire, and he knows what this vampire is going to do to him when he's biting his wrist and like opening a vein. And like there's this like moment where before Boris brings his wrist down to Dean's face, like Dean leans up into it, like he's chasing it, and then he follows the movement back, and like his mouth completely open, and like Boris isn't holding it open.
No, there is an element of force here, but there's mm-hmm. also, it's not as simple as just force, which is not to say that this is not a situation of like a predatory behavior. I think that's like really important to be really clear that like Dean does not ask to be turned into a vampire. Dean makes it really clear he is resisting this. This is like forced upon him, which is also really interesting when you think about the queerness piece of like some, he is hit on against his will. He vocally rejects the advance and then is still assaulted.
Yeah. And like, I'm reading this book. It's called like The Vampire Film. It's like part of like a shortcut like series or whatever. So like it's about vampire cinema, and it describes the process of getting turned into a vampire within vampiric cinema as part seduction, part rape, and always involving the sexualized exchange of bodily fluids. I think that's really well represented within this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is even made, which is what makes it, I think, really interesting the way they choose to like the writing choices and the directing choices here, because they don't don't have to, because vampires are inherently have this sexualized element to getting turned into a vampire, who turns who suddenly becomes a really important choice you make as a writer in terms of like your characters. And they make the choice again, like this is not the first time they've made a choice where like the context and the inference has to be a certain thing if you make a certain choice with a certain character. And they make the choice to have a male vampire turn D.
After like seeing a different suspected male vampire be blatantly, explicitly queer, we go into an alley where like he's chasing this like heterosexual couple off, obviously like get hot and heavy. And then like you have Dean then switched and like turned into the damsel in this situation. Like he becomes like the woman in that, like the previous couple, except like this is not a consensual thing, but like it is a very conscious choice of like not only like this is a male vampire changing this male human, when we learn later that like there are plenty of female vampires that could have done the same thing,
that they have plans to do the same thing to other men.
And like this vampire is like blatantly showing his attraction to Dean, being as explicitly queer that he is a queer-coded monster without actually saying like, I like both teams, you know? And then like, I don't know, it's just, there's a lot of choices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because then you have like the whole concept of the cure. Like, this is what drives me insane about this episode. It's very much here is conversion therapy, because like it's so solely reliant on Dean's ability or the person who's been turned's ability to repress their desires and not act on them.
To resist to the point of death. Like basically to be like, to resist, you resist or die. You die. Like you really, and ultimately
resistance,
you will.
It's futile.
That isn't a metaphor for the queer experience. Like,
yeah. I had like a good thing from the same text where they talked about Dracula's Daughter, which is a very queer movie, and how it kind of starts with her like seeking out psychological help to try and like rid herself of this desire and this to like drink blood and like be a vampire or whatever. And like the prescription is like essentially like sympathetic treatment consisting of willpower and self-denial, which resembles many cures for homosexuality. And Dean's put in the same position in this episode.
And the only like response that the only thing he is allowed to do is to kill other vampires, is to like enact violence on other vampires, which is again such a like interesting thing to think about with queerness and vampirism being so linked. Like he has to, the violence has to go somewhere, and it goes both internally and externally.
Mm-hmm. And like the continually like pathologizing vampirism within this universe, first in a way that is like relevant to AIDS, and now in a way that is, it's a mental thing too, both ways that like are related to how homosexuality has been portrayed and like thought of over the course of particularly the 20th century.
Yeah. And even the cure itself, like the cure is
requires a piece of the one who turned you, like, whoa.
Mm. And it's like, it's either gonna work or it's gonna kill you.
And you know, either of those is a good outcome.
Yeah.
What would be bad would be if you gave in to these desires. You can't possibly be a good vampire.
Hmm.
We would rather you be a dead vampire or be a human again.
Yeah, because the only good vampire is a dead vampire.
Mm-hmm. Which is also interesting. Like, I want to call us back to like season one, because even in season one, this show was doing interesting things with like, and vampires, are vampires like inherently unable to resist or unable to be good or unable to like, is the only good vampire a dead vampire? Because we have vampires that they let go because they're not drinking human blood. They're just living their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But they aren't trying to not be vampires. They're not trying to get cured, those vampires in season one. They are finding ways to not drink human blood, but they're not,
they don't
trying
know
to find a cure. No, and they're not looking
even
for
if
a cure.
They, did, they couldn't, because they've already drank human blood prior.
Yeah. So wouldn't
but
work for
not,
them anyway.
They're not just like, the answer is not to just for them to just die because of who they are, or because of, you know.
No, what I want to know is why Samuel has the ability to know this spell that came down through his family, but he never shared it with any other hunters or made sure it wasn't written down somewhere, because like, I feel like he hasn't
dispelled this information to people.
Yeah, if you're having a hunter network, share that shit.
Right, like why wasn't it shared before he died originally?
Yeah, exactly. It like, should have been passed down.
It's not like it's shown that they have it is passed down through the generations familially. It's not like hunters are really known for like having hunter networks of communication beyond the family.
So did Mary know?
Or do the other Campbells know? And why didn't they tell their kids?
Yeah.
Because we've already seen multiple Campbells working with Samuel, and we've already heard them mention they have kids or wives.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do we know that they don't know? The only people who are really out of the only person who's really out of the loop is Dean.
So, but then why does like no hunter, including like Bobby, who's and incredibly Rufus. Well-networked.
Yeah, you would
nobody
think
at any point previously.
Because it's a Campbell family thing.
Okay, so I'm saying they're fucking selfish.
The Campbell's fucking suck. They're like, we know how to cure vampires.
That like that's like why no one else knows about it, because like it stayed within this family that like until this season we thought died with Mary.
Yeah, well, and also it seems like this is not something Samuel has necessarily it's unclear of whether or not he has ever used this cure before, because he even says like this will either kill you or it'll work.
Yeah, because he says it's been like a long time since anyone's used it.
Yeah,
and I feel like
so they're not meeting vampires and trying this. They're not giving vampires an opportunity to try this. They are just killing vampires. Yeah. 99.9% of the time. This is the first time that they're actually trying to not kill a vampire.
Because I think it's the first time since that season 3 episode we meet a freshly turned vampire who hasn't fed yet.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's it.
Well, and prior to season 1 too, they thought the vampires were gone.
Yeah. They didn't
use a whole other thing. They thought vampires were extinct, so
they've grown a lot in the last couple of years.
Such a turnaround. Now it's in popular media everywhere and everybody's familiar with them, and
vampires are having a resurgence.
The
best time to be a vampire in 600 years.
I don't know. I feel like before the internet was.
I did appreciate the Anne Rice mention.
That was so interesting to have this dude specifically say like Anne Rice and like interview with a vampire, because that was one of the first pieces of vampiric media or like cinematic vampires that like just went away with the pretext of like keeping like this homeless like queerness of vampires relegated to like this under the surface anxiety of towards male vampires, and was just like, no, these fuckers are gay.
Yep.
Was like, that is so, just they're vampires, they're gay.
It's erotic.
Like, you could say gay vampires, but that would just be like redundant, because it's just they're the same thing.
Yeah. So I thought it was interesting that he like said Dracula and this and Anne Rice, because then it's also like Anne Rice is, I don't know how to feel about Anne Rice.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about her to have an opinion of her.
She just was like weird about fanfic.
Yes.
Do we get more information on the twins and the weird vision that Dean gets when he turns non-vampire human again?
I don't think we can answer that question.
Yeah, that's a little...
But that's...
If we told you, we'd have to kill you.
We're not done with the teasers they're giving us in this episode. Yeah, they're not going to drop those threads.
Yeah,
that's
it's one of those things where it's like there actually is follow through for one.
Yeah. This is, I mean, and yeah.
I will say also with like keeping with this like this weird blatant queerness, but also homophobia within this episode in regards to vampires. I realized watching this, I was like, I really don't like that they call vampires fangs. Like, take one letter out. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, that's.
It was really uncomfortable when Samuel was just like, we gotta find the thing that turns you. And I was like, oh, wait, hold on.
And it's interesting that it's Samuel who is also like the one
from the era that was very problematic with that word.
Yeah. And like, I think I had the same thought when I was watching the season 3 episode with Porter and Walker, but like, it's just like every time someone calls him a fang, I'm just like hit with it again.
Fair.
Oh, Gordon.
They're better. Do you ever, like, I sometimes think about like whether or not, like, what's his name, Sterling K. Brown? Do you think he like thinks about the fact he's on Supernatural.
I hope not.
He remembers it fondly. He remembers it fondly.
Do you think he remembers Fresh Blood fondly? I don't think he remembers Fresh Blood fondly.
Not quite.
I want to meet him and ask him. Like, hey.
Right, you want to meet him and be like,
watch his face fall.
I'm not going to ask about any of the other much better things you've been a part of. I'm going to ask you about Supernatural back in 2007.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I think it would be like one of those, like, I saw this TikTok talking about how it's like, it's fun and funny to like see like a famous person and be like, oh my God, I loved you in like your least known role.
Right. In something you did two episodes of.
Yeah. I would do that with a lot of people I would meet.
There's a lot of Supernatural actors that went on to do other, like, I feel like even there's even some actors that are like have decently good sized roles. There's one that I can't mention right now, but like, has, you know, there's a few people that have gone on to like much bigger franchises and had, you know, good sized roles.
Right. Cause I was thinking, you could say the same thing about Sterling Hayward. He was in fucking Black Panther.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
This Is Us. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Come on.
I didn't watch that, which is weird because it's like, that's a Pittsburgh show. I never watched it because I was like, this is just going to make me sad.
I mean, it did. I didn't finish it. I watched a lot of it and then I kind of fell off. I think one of the season breaks, and then when it came on the air, I stopped. I just didn't.
I think I tried to watch the pilot and I was like,
Can't do it.
Sterling K. Brown has done so much, and I mean, yeah, there's so many actors that were like, hi, I'm in this episode, and then now I'm a superstar elsewhere.
I just have to always assume at this point that if I recognize someone and I can't figure out why I vaguely recognize them, they were probably on two episodes of Supernatural.
Yep.
Speaking of Sam, the little sad nod that Dean gives Sam right as they are, you know, getting into the car, getting ready to go away. And Sam says, yeah, of course you can count on me. That sad little nod hurts.
It does.
Hurts.
Yeah, of course. He also calls
him Sammy right after he gets turned, which I also thought was like,
that's it.
Only does that when he's feeling vulnerable. When either he's feeling protective of Sam, he's teasing him, or he's being vulnerable. And this is one of those like vulnerable moments.
The Venn diagram of those three things is just a circle.
Yeah. Because like, that was like, he didn't know Sam saw him, like, just stop and watch it happen. He was just really scared. And I was like, God.
Yeah. That moment, he just thinks Sam arrived right at the right time.
Yeah. But hey, and then like purposely misses the vampire with the machete.
Yeah.
Also, we're definitely simmering this like mistrust. I think I thought it was really interesting that doing the way they did the memories thing, like where Dean actually figures it out. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting lore piece.
Haunting.
Mm-hmm. That it's almost like he gets like a rewind tape of what's happened to him as a vampire when he's here.
He sees like an outside perspective too. Like, it's like almost kind of like he's watching it from like the, like,
our perspective.
Like watching it from the, our perspective, or I guess like in universe.
Like he's like just a
forest perspective.
Being experiencing time.
Also, okay, so something I noticed in this episode, that because of my Destiel brain rot.
Yes.
Because, like, again, like the whole episode, I'm like, why the fuck would they not just call Cass? Why would they not just call Cass? Like, you need to keep being contained? Call the angel. You need to get the blood from the vampire, who can just call the angel. He can pop in, get the blood without even being noticed. Like, you have a solution here. It's one of those things. It's like, it's the absence felt very pointed, because we see Dean barely be able to like resist his like lust for Lisa. And it's like, I wonder, but he's able to, because it's not that deep. He doesn't have a profound bond with her. But I wonder what would happen when the dark-haired blue-eyed angel, who he does have a profound bond with, pops up. But then, like, as the episode goes on and we get more into like the lore and like what's going on with the vampires, like the vampires in this episode, like, they felt like angels, like particularly when like they were getting messages from their father.
Yeah, it was a little weird.
Down to like the whisperers that like they did for like 2 episodes in season 4 with the angels, and then gave up on.
But oh, that's true. Yeah, the like angel radio kind of sound.
Yeah, like it felt like Forrest was this weird stand-in for Cass, or not stand-in, but like almost mirror or like something to him. And then like with certain choices made going down the road with Cass, it's like maybe that wasn't an accident. Like maybe there actually is something to this right now.
That's super interesting. Had not thought of that.
Especially when he like looks at Dean and he's like, you didn't stop anything. This is so much bigger than you or me. It felt very reminiscent of like early Apocalypse days. Yes. Like when Cass was still, you know, leader of an angel garrison, not Cass.
And when he still would go to Dean and be like, what you are doing ultimately like does not matter at all. Like what's going to happen is going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, with the personal space. Really.
They just all have a hard time giving Dean his personal space.
Yeah.
Can't imagine why.
Like Dean has it tight.
Even when he
sure does.
He really, in ways I can't talk about yet, but he does. Oh my God. Twilight, did they do like a Volvo campaign?
They did.
Okay.
I recall it vividly.
That's why.
I wish I didn't.
Glad we have someone on this call that can fact check.
Can confirm. Because he drives, he drives one. They've had all these very strategic, like, product placement shots of when she almost gets hit by a car. And it's like, oh, look, she almost gets hit by a Volvo. Like, it was weird.
Okay.
Very bizarre product placement.
I wrote down Forrest's quote where he's like, Dracula and Rice, please. These stupid little brats are so horny. They reinvented us as Prince Charming with a Volvo. And I was like, why the fuck did he say Volvo?
because that's what Edward drives. And they did a whole campaign. They basically had like a Twilight car. It wasn't called that, obviously. But that's in effect what it was.
All right.
Noah, do you have any, like, with some of these, like, hints, do you have any, like, thoughts or predictions or, like, of where they're going with some of this stuff?
Not one that I've, like, decided on and, like, yeah, that's the best option. I'm throwing a lot of spaghetti at the wall right now, it feels like.
I want to hear some of those noodles, though. I'm curious, like, what are your thoughts on this?
It's true. You think that the Sam thing is Lucifer adjacent, potentially. That could be something what's up with Sam. It's not
that's
Sam.
That's gonna be my favorite of your theories
not
so
Sam.
Far.
Could be Crowley. It's something that's not.
Yeah.
How do you think Samuel, like, any thoughts on Samuel in general?
Oh, I have a question.
Piece of shit. I don't know.
That's
my least favorite character in the show currently.
Yeah, I hate him.
I was curious, Noah, what you thought specifically of his interaction after Dean leaves the room.
That makes me think that Sam is different around Samuel too. He's not remembering quote unquote conversations that had happened months ago. Is he been different since, you know, 6 months into the year that he's been gone from Dean? Did he change or has he been this weird the whole time? Is he lying about remembering stuff to everybody?
Did he just start being weird when they reunited with Dean? Like,
how
we don't
deep
know.
Yeah. Does it go? We don't know. I don't know.
We might know.
Really?
Yeah, we might. Yeah.
Possibly. There is at least 1967% chance that we know.
At least we all know how percents work. So
yep. Yeah.
Good.
11 out of 10 would recommend my math classes.
Yeah. I do wonder, like, now it's got me thinking about, like, how is Sam acting before Dean? Like, is he weird to everyone now? Or is he just weird to Dean? Or, like, what's this year been like? Now I'm just, like, thinking about it.
Or, like, what's Sam's personality been?
Yeah, like, how is it just Dean who thinks he's weird? And well, is that just, like...
What about Bobby? Bobby's the opinion I'd be very curious about, because, like...
Yeah.
Like...
The question we ask ourselves every week on this show.
What would Bobby do?
Put that on
another contender for episode title.
WWBD. What would Bobby do?
Well, guess I'm designing those stickers later tonight.
You know what he would do? He would hear about this situation and he would share that fucking vampire recipe
yeah.
with every hunter he's ever met because he's
he would not
a good person.
That shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking Samuel Campbell gatekeeping the one cure we have like for vampirism.
Yeah.
A pretty it's common great. Occurrence. In their line of work.
Very much want to face punch him.
Not Bobby, but Sam. Yep.
Dean does. I do think it's very funny when Dean's with Lisa and he goes, oh God, I'm Pattinson.
Yeah. Oh, actually, yes. If I may offer a main discussion closing point, it is that scene and the way in which, because we were talking earlier in the episode about parody and how they do such a good job of like parodying it at the beginning of the episode with this overdramatic, emo, like exaggerative version of the actual weirdness that it was. Mm-hmm. But then you get this scene in the bedroom and it is trying to, it is shot in such a way where it's unironically trying to be like those scenes. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Jane is the vampire that's waiting by the window, and then, you know, Lisa is there and he's watching her sleep, and he just got done saying how creepy this was, and yeah, now he's doing it.
It's literally an exact image of, like, copy-paste image of, like, the cover of that book he was holding up.
Yeah, and I love the layers to that, and that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons I think this episode is so good, that it, like, it makes a parody of something, and then it parodies the parody that it's parodying. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's still so funny. It doesn't get lost in the weeds of the parody. It doesn't overdo the parody.
And it doesn't take away from the seriousness of the scene that he's having with Lisa either.
Yeah.
Like, that scene still plays with a more serious tone because of, like, you know, the fact that Dean is, like, under this, you know, influence, and he's hearing mm-hmm. her heartbeat, and he wants to be with her, but he can't. It's a whole tension that's going on there. But, like, it's so good. It's, like, yeah. a parody inception, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost to the point where it's, like, not a parody. Like, it feels sincere.
Yeah, and that's like the weird part. Like, it goes so far into parody that it comes out on the other side as an organic scene.
Like, yeah, it's like he yeah. is Edward in that moment. Genuine moment of, like, he understands. Like, I feel like Edward Cullen in this moment. Because then it's by, like, those interesting things with, like, gender and vampires, because, like, vampires are very hyperbolic when it comes to gender mm-hmm. presentation traditionally yeah. within vampire cinema. But then, like, you have this kind of more understated masculinity with Edward Cullen, where it's like he's this perfect man that, like, teenage girls want, but then that, like, just draws.
He's a, you know, Northwest Pacific guy in, like, a, you know, yeah. pea coat that's really clean cut and is maybe a little too pasty and sparkly.
Yeah. And he's, like, sensitive, but he's also very strong and, like, protective and possessive in a way that's, like, almost bordering on creepy, but also, like, not, because he does, like, protect her, but it's also, like, he won't claim her, even though, like, he
yeah, has,
like, it's weird. But it's just, like, it's like this man doesn't exist, but, like, we want him to. I don't know. But then it's also, like, if he did exist, it would be like this, where it's like, you're in danger, get out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think Robert Pattinson's seen this episode?
I hope so.
I think he'd like it.
With the amount that he actively hated Twilight, I'm pretty sure he has.
Yeah. Yeah.
He probably was like, good job. He probably called up Jensen afterwards. It's like, let's go grab a whiskey.
You're doing, like, good. You're yeah. doing the good work. The good Twilight slander.
Said, I'll grab a beer with you. That even though your brother didn't want to.
He probably sent him, like, a fruit basket of, like, a bunch of, like, posters of himself.
Yeah, I think if they ever met at some sort of, like, Batman-related media thing, Pattinson would be like, hey, by the way, that one episode?
The one episode where you write in Twilight?
Oh my gosh, wait a minute.
Jensen's going to play the next live-action Batman. We're just manifesting that. He's yeah. already done
been
voice
preparing
acting.
For this.
And if he does, the very first meme my ass is sharing is that scene where he just says, oh God, I'm Pattinson.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be so good.
Supernatural memes are a pocket dimension of depth. There is just so, yeah. like, they shouldn't. I just, anyway, that's the El Putin election. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. It'd be fun because at New Jersey Con, he talked about how he hadn't seen the Batman because he was like, acting like he had a grudge against Pattinson
yeah,
for being Batman.
Which is so funny.
It was so cute. Oh my gosh.
So that's going to bring us to our last and favorite part of this episode, and that is our character blessing. Does anybody have a blessing they would like to start with?
I feel like I have to be consistent here and say I'm offering my blessings to Cass, even though he wasn't in this episode at all. It's always him. I'm always thinking about him. I'm thinking about what he's doing in heaven right now. It must not be very fun. I'm sure he's not having a great time. So I'm offering blessings to Cass.
Amazing. Good choices.
If I may. I would like to bless Dean for glimpsing what queerness he could have and not in this moment being in a place where he's ready to pursue that for himself. I've been in that space. It's not a fun space. I think most queer people have been in that space. And so a blessing to both the character for experiencing it and anybody who has felt or is feeling that. It's weird to, like, see this life and be like, I could do that, but I can't. Mm-hmm. It's a tough space to occupy. Mm-hmm. So blessings. Mm-hmm.
I'll jump in there and second that blessing for Dean, because not only is he having to deal with all of that, but now he's got confirmation that the closest person to him is very suspicious about his motivations and lying to his face constantly. So he's got to juggle that as well.
Yeah, good. Yes, I like that, both sides of that blessing. I'm going to bless I think mostly Kristen and then the other kind of unnamed female victims in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't get a happy ending. Most of them die. So a blessing for them, because they also deserve to not have this happen to them.
Yeah.
And to come out of this all right. And it sucks that they don't.
Can I give like a retroactive blessing?
Yes, sure. Always.
Because now I'm thinking about Lucy, the vampire from season 3. She could have lived.
She hadn't lived yet. She hadn't. And they tried so hard to help her.
Yeah.
And they couldn't do anything because they didn't know the goddamn cure.
Yeah. Well, they didn't really try that. Well, Dean didn't try that hard. He was kind of mean to her. So, like, now I'm thinking, like, it could have been different.
Yeah. They didn't think there was any options.
Yeah. And I'm sad for her because she was so scared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's this really great fic that I've read that I don't think I've recommended on the podcast before. I will link to it in the episode description. It does kind of, it has spoilers. Anyway, it is a fic that uses some of this, like, vampire cure thing quite a bit. It is, like, an alternate Sam didn't come back from Stanford and then does and then comes and finds Dean like 10 years later, like 5-10 years later. It's a really good fic. It's got a couple of really good twists. It is Destiel, largely focused on like Sam's arc. It's really good. I'm gonna find it and link it in the episode description. It's one I like go back to because the twist is really, really delightful. Read with caution if you have not watched the whole show. I don't believe there are any major spoilers in it like past season 5 or 6. Okay, I can't find this fic title right now, but I will link it in the episode description when I do find it.
Sounds epic.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you so much for coming on, Pluto. It's great to have you back and lovely to have a discussion about this Twilight episode.
I can't believe we made it to the Twilight episode. Wow.
That's like an accomplishment.
I don't want to make my sister watch this now.
I think I'm going to have to go back and watch Twilight again to really appreciate this episode.
Oh gosh.
Actually, like, she refuses to rewatch the movies or like reread the books because she's scared if she does it now, she'll hate them and she doesn't want to like ruin her childhood.
Nothing can ruin my childhood more than J.K. Rowling. I was going to say. So everything else is just, yeah, whatever.
Is there anywhere on the internet that people can find your lovely thoughts and opinions? I didn't have anything for the and. Should have said it.
I don't know if they're lovely, but you can find me on Twitter at @e65gwenstacy or type in queerbait scholar. I'll pop up. As for literally anywhere else on the internet, Spidey highlight you. Twitter will always be the outlier, and it throws people off really badly when they try and find me on there from other platforms.
It took me a while, even though I like have followed you on Twitter for also a really long time. Every single time I have to go look for you on Twitter, I'm always like, always type it in like 3 different ways before I actually am like, right, different username.
Every time one of my friends try and at me, they always tell me, they like, I go through the 7 stages of grief trying to find you on Twitter, even though we've been mutuals for like a year and a half.
Yeah. So to save you all the trouble, I will link those in the episode description so you can just take those links.
I think they're all in my link tree.
Oh, wonderful. We will put your link tree there. We'll put your link tree there and people can go and follow you everywhere.
Is the link in there?
For great analysis and queerbait studies and lots of fandom history stuff you post.
There will also be a link to my Ko-fi in that, where I occasionally post things. I have like 20 different whips going on for what I want to post on my Ko-fi, but then I get distracted by something else I want to write, so nothing gets finished. But there, I think about it. There are some things posted on there.
That's the energy. That's a relatable energy.
Oh my god, wait. I can't end the episode without talking about the fact that like My Little Vampire Thesis, I use images from this episode on like a cover page. The thing is titled The World is a Bisexual Vampire, like Vampirism and Queerness and Supernatural, or in the Demon Chester Supernatural, whatever. And I had Jensen Ackles sign it.
That's amazing. Is that piece of writing something that people can read?
Not yet.
Okay, fair enough.
It is a very, very, I wish it were just about this episode, because then, yeah, probably it would be.
Yeah, it's not, though.
I've been working on it for like over a year, but no, it is nowhere close.
Okay. Even when you are sharing it, let us know, because we will tweet about it and promote it. And
by the time this episode comes out, who knows? Maybe.
Maybe. I'm just hoping it's done by New Jersey Con next year, because I want to get the final product signed by Jensen and be like, I know this is weird because your signature is already on this,
but
it's done this time.
Same with the finished product. Amazing. Well, thank you to everyone who's listening. If you like this episode and you want to hear more, you can make sure you're subscribed to Saving People, Queering Things, wherever you listen to podcasts, and maybe share our show with your friends.
And you can also join our free Discord server, find links to our socials, and catch up on all the latest season mixtapes at our website, queeringthingspodcast.com.
Also out now, Queering People Saving Throws. Our main crew, along with KJ of Supernatural Opinions, are taking a dive into a queer D&D adventure, releasing every other Friday right here on our feed.
Be sure to ride along with us next week as we explore Season 6, Episode 6, You Can't Handle the Truth, through the theme of listening.
Thank you all for coming along for the ride, and we wish you a peaceful road until we meet again.